Chapter 45. The Southern Hemisphere, the projectile had just escaped a terrible danger, and a very unforeseen one. Who would have thought of such an encounter with meteors? These erring bodies might create serious perils for the travelers. They were to them, so many sandbanks upon that sea of ether which, less fortunate than sailors, they could not escape. But did these adventurers complain of space? No, not since nature had given them the splendid sight of a cosmical meteor bursting from expansion, since this inimitable firework, which no ruggier eye could imitate, had lit up for some seconds the invisible glory of the moon. In that flash, continents, seas, and forests had become visible to them. Did an atmosphere, then, bring to this unknown face its life-giving atoms? Question still insoluble, and forever closed against human curiosity. It was then 3:30 in the afternoon. The projectile was following its curvilinear direction round the moon. Had its course again been altered by the meteor? It was to be feared so. But the projectile must describe a curve unalterably determined by the laws of mechanical reasoning. Barbicane was inclined to believe that this curve would be rather a parabola than a hyperbola. But admitting the parabola, the projectile must quickly have passed through the cone of shadow projected into space opposite the sun. This cone, indeed, is very narrow, the angular diameter of the moon being so little when compared with the diameter of the orb of day, and up to this time the projectile had been floating in this deep shadow. Whatever had been its speed, and it could not have been insignificant, its period of occultation continued. That was evident, but perhaps that would not have been the case in a supposedly rigidly parabolical trajectory, a new problem which tormented Barbicane's brain, imprisoned as he was in a circle of unknowns which he could not unravel. Neither of the travelers thought of taking an instant's repose. Each one watched for an unexpected fact, which might throw some new light on their uranographic studies. About 5:00, Michel Ardan distributed, under the name of dinner, some pieces of bread and cold meat, which were quickly swallowed without either of them abandoning their scuttle, the glass of which was incessantly encrusted by the condensation of vapor. About 5:45 in the evening, Nicholl, armed with his glass, sighted toward the southern border of the moon, and in the direction followed by the projectile, some bright points cut upon the dark shield of the sky. They looked like a succession of sharp points lengthened into a tremulous line. They were very bright. Such appeared the terminal line of the moon, when in one of her octants. They could not be mistaken. It was no longer a simple meteor. This luminous ridge had neither color nor motion. Nor was it a volcano in eruption. And Barbicane did not hesitate to pronounce upon it. "The sun," he exclaimed. "What, the sun?" answered Nicholl and Michel Ardan. "Yes, my friends, it is the radiant orb itself lighting up the summit of the mountain situated on the southern borders of the moon. We are evidently nearing the South Pole." "After having passed the North Pole," replied Michel, "we have made the circuit of our satellite, then?" "Yes, my good Michel." "Then, no more hyperbolas, no more parabolas, no more open curves to fear?" "No, but a closed curve, which is called an ellipse. Instead of losing itself in interplanetary space, it is probable that the projectile will describe an elliptical orbit around the moon." "Indeed. And that it will become her satellite." "Moon of the moon!" cried Michel Ardan. "Only, I would have you observe, my worthy friend," replied Barbicane, "that we are nonetheless lost for that." "Yes, in another manner, and much more pleasantly," answered the careless Frenchman with his most amiable smile. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.